The all-new season of Futurama is streaming on Hulu.
That's great,
but I have to warn you, it's completely brilliant.
The interplanetary hit is back.
The very survival of Earth is at stake.
Is everybody okay? Is anybody hurt?
Nobody's okay. Everybody's hurt.
Watch the all-new season of Futurama.
That's the best damn show I ever saw.
New episodes Mondays, streaming only on Hulu.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
It's the Eye on the Illini podcast series. I'm Larry Smith. Glad you're with us here. Presented by IlliniGuys.com. It is NCAA tournament time and Illinois getting ready for its first round matchup. The Illini, the 4 seed out of the South region, taking on 13 seed Chattanooga. And to learn more about the Mocs, we wanted to go to, an expert. He is Gene Henley, the beat writer for the Chattanooga Mocs out of the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Gene, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, I appreciate y'all having me, man. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's start. Let's talk about, here's the thing. Chattanooga is the sexy pick around the country to beat Illinois as a 13 seed over a 4. And I'm not going to discount that. But it became a sexy pick because Seth Davis went on and said they should win. We don't want to go with speculation because we don't think Seth knows anything about Chattanooga or Illinois. So we want to go to the expert. Tell us about the Chattanooga Mocs.
Wow. Well, I guess I understand why so many people are kind of rushing to that pick. It's almost weird that all time UTC has never lost to Illinois. It's weird. It's a weird thing, but they're 2-0. They won in the round of 32 in 1997 when they went to the Sweet 16, and then they actually beat them in 2016. So I guess there's this weird thing that, you know, typically mid-majors don't have that level of success. It's not a lot, but it's obviously spread out. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, Illinois has the post player. Is it Kofi?
Yes, Kofi Colbert.
Kofi, okay, yeah. Okay. I'm always afraid I'm going to butcher that name. So, yeah, they've got Kofi, and I understand how a lot of people say, well, no, they've got nobody to stop Kofi, but they actually have 3 high-level bigs that have transferred into the program. It's Silvio De Sousa. I mean, everybody kind of knows. I don't really need to go into too much detail as to Silvio's story prior to reaching UTC. It's well-known. It's well-documented. There's pictures all over the Internet of Silvio's career at Kansas. They also have 2 other bigs, one guy that played at State Bonaventure, a guy named Josh Ieni, and another big named Avery Diggs, who's about 6'11", and played at UCF for a couple years. So they've got 3. I guess there's a feeling that they've got 3 guys they can throw at a guy like at Kofi. And, you know, there's obviously the combination of those 3 bigs that could maybe not, you know, not stop the guy. You don't stop a guy averaging like 20 and 12 or whatever he's averaging, but at least kind of slow him down to make things uncomfortable at times for him. And then they do have 2 good guards. They got a point guard and Malachi Smith, who's actually 6'4", good size, good body. I think he averaged 20.7 rebounds and 3 assists this year, shot over 50% from the field and 43. Then they've got another, you know, obviously the viral guard, David Jean Baptiste, who has been in the league in that conference, in the Southern Conference, longer than 8 of the 10 coaches that are currently in the league. Mm. I think he joined the program in 2016, was under their previous coach, Matt McCall, who recently was let go at UMass. He spent a year redshirting under McCall and has been with Lamont Paris for 5 seasons. I think he's hit like 285 threes in his career as a school record. So they've got guys that, I mean, they don't have a ton of depth, but the depth they have is pretty quality. They've got some transfers. They've got a kid. You know, I've got a kid about 6'6", who scored 1,000 points at his previous school and then transferred. It's just been a role player. A kid named Darius Banks. They've got another kid who played at St. Louis, 6'7" kid who could, you know, decent shooter. He's left-handed and I'm left-handed, so I never expect him to miss. But the percentages don't quite bear themselves out that way. The players they have are all quality players. I mean, it's probably just you know, I say it as a testament to what this coach is built, because they're not necessarily built like a high, I mean, like a mid-major, specifically because of that interior position where you don't see mid-majors that can throw three bigs that are capable. I think all three have scored at least 18 in the game this year in a like a against D1 competition. So they've got the guys. It's just, I mean, I understand why people are making the pick, but I'm still kind of the got to see it to believe it thing.
Well, and I think that's the thing that with anybody you go through, you look at those, the 5-12 game has always been popular for, I mean, it's not uncommon to have two or three 12s win in the opening round. And I think we're seeing more and more, and Illinois has been burned by this before within the 4-13, as you mentioned early on. I want to say it was, might've been a 4-13 game back in 97 or even a 3-14 game when Chattanooga beat them for the first time. You know, and the Mocs are a team that I've been watching all year as one of those teams, I think, that may wind up being underseeded. The way that the process goes once the committee gets a hold of the teams, Chattanooga fits into that category. Chattanooga's talent and their resume is not one of a regular 13 seed. This is a team that really you could argue could have been seeded 10th or 11th.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what they were going to do. Nothing ever seemed to move from 12 or 13. They had a couple, like they had kind of a weird season where they, you know, they beat BCU early in the season, and they kind of, that's been the win that they propped up. You know, they beat Furman three times, including obviously that classic in the championship game of their conference. And Furman was a really good team who, I mean, unfortunately didn't, you know, because of mid-major, you know, kind of sometimes bias, didn't receive any sort of postseason invitation. And I thought that was a team that was a pretty quality team. But you know, they also lost to the last place team in the conference. They lost to, I can't remember. They have four conference losses. So Samford, who ended, you know, got hot at the end and won 20-something games. UNC Greensboro kind of beat them up one time, and I think they're going to one of those pay for tournaments. BMI, same thing. So they kind of had some losses against the sort of competition that. Yeah, you kind of question it, and so, and obviously when you're playing like a mid-major schedule, you have zero room for error. You know, the Big Ten is, you know, playing the share of that regular season. A lot of this stuff gets devalued at high majors because what do you do in the postseason? But then they don't always use that, but they use it sometimes. And you know, I feel like if you won a share of the championship in, you know, the league that you gave the most respect to, that should probably have a little bit more, you know, to do with your seeding, but it didn't. And 5 years ago, UTC kind of got, you know, the same thing when they drew Indiana, an Indiana team that won the regular season and lost in the Big Ten tournament. He got underseeded as a result and proceeded to beat UTC and then beat Kentucky pretty handily in Des Moines, Iowa, before I think it beat the Sweet 16. So UTC has certainly done enough. They certainly have the makeup of a team that's really talented and really dangerous. So I can't answer exactly why they're so low, because I would probably agree with you. But I mean, if I had to answer it, probably more mainly because of some of those baffling losses late in the season.
Yeah, and I think that for some reason that, it, like you said, the conference, you get to a Southern Conference, and I think Chattanooga had another game that they, I think down at Mercer, they trailed, but they rallied late and ended up winning in overtime. Was another one of those games that they struggled against a team that maybe wasn't as quality opponent as some of the other teams that the Mocs have beaten. But I know that conference comes into play at some point, and when you look at the numbers, it's almost like, well, somebody has to go to the 13 line, and they kind of fill from the bottom up. And unfortunately, that's just, you know, just the numbers, the way it works out. But I think it does pose those issues, and it creates those opportunities for upsets, what you would call an upset. There's one that comes to mind years ago when Kansas as a one seed loses to like a 9 seed Northern Iowa in the second round. And Northern Iowa should have been a 5 seed that year again in terms of resume. But that's what makes March so much fun. You know, you talked about in terms of the experience of this, you've got, clearly you have some players who have come, like you said, from other programs. So it's an older, mature team. With your experience, what kind of difference does that make in the NCAA tournament when you have some older players as opposed to a lot of freshmen or guys who haven't been there before?
It doesn't matter to them. it doesn't matter to younger players as much, because it's almost like the, you know, it's almost in a sense like the Dan Marino thing, where he makes the Super Bowl his second year, they lose, oh, he'll be back, he'll be back, and they never get back. Whereas like seniors, they understand, you know, juniors and seniors, they understand that, like, you know, this may not happen again. And there is a level of angst, you know, because, you know, like you notice how this UTC program, since the championship back in 2016, you know, they started 15-4 the next season and then fell apart, you know, won 19 games and the coach bolted for UMass. Then Lamont Paris, new head coach, takes over. He wins 10 games in year one, wins 12 games in year two. Then he gets up to 20, then, you know, up to 18 in the COVID year, and here they are now. And only a few of those players have remained, but the guys that they brought in, I think they understand the task. And I think when you have juniors and seniors, they understand that, like, you know, you can't take this season for granted, because, you know, you never know. And I think because you have a lot of times, like Power Five, Power Six schools, who are always, it doesn't matter what we do, we're going to be in the tournament. You know, as long as we just, you know, show a pulse, we'll go 23-10 or whatever the case may be, and we'll be in the tournament. So getting there, you know, it matters, but maybe not as much. Whereas you have a team like UTC, who obviously is happy to be there, but now that, you know, now they're looking and saying, it's not just we're happy to be there. Let's see if we can make some noise here. And I think that's what happens when you have experienced teams. I mean, look at what Calipari did at Kentucky after he had the bad season he had last year. He pretty much scraped, you know, just scrapped the, you know, the one and done model. He got a couple guys, but went and got transfers and did, you know, and he has a much better program. So the teams that usually win in March typically have experienced guard play, guys who are juniors and seniors that have been through the wars, have been through the battles, and just simply want to win. Whereas some of these younger teams, they don't necessarily this new intensity level that they may not always be ready for.
You bring up John Calipari. It's funny, and you're exactly right. The Kentucky Wildcats had their worst season since before the Great Depression last season. I mean, they won only 9 games, and Calipari in the preseason, actually, I saw him with a quote, and I'm not kidding. He said, "We usually have better teams when we have older players," which I thought a Hall of Fame coach would already know, but okay. Yeah, so you're exactly right. I mean, yeah, that usually
works. It's crazy. Who would have thought, man? Look at Calipari, Hall of Famer, man. Just like the quote of the century there.
Exactly. Like,
oh, hanging up in the Hall of Fame. Hanging up in the Hall of Fame right next to us black, man. I won when I had older players.
That's
okay,
right.
Cool.
Gotcha. That's right. Exactly.
Water is wet.
That's right. So, but Kentucky, a formidable opponent, and in the NCAA tournament as a 2 seed. As well, talking with Gene Henley here, he is the beat writer for the Chattanooga Mocs for the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Want to talk about, in terms of one thing that's being discussed in Illini Nation, is the Mocs' deficiency on defense. This is a team that by stats, in terms of ranking, gives up a lot of points, or a high percentage of field goals. Have you seen much of Illinois, and what do you think Chattanooga needs to do to offset Illinois if their shooters are on, and which they're not always, but when they're on, they're a tough team to defend?
Yeah, well, it's weird, because I think according to KenPom, towards the end of the season, I believe they had the number one or number two defense in the league. You know, the Big Ten has a lot similar stuff. Big post players. I mean, look at Purdue, always has a guy who's like 7'5". you know, Michigan has Hunter Dickinson. Obviously, Illinois has Kofi. I mean, a lot of those teams are built similar, especially your better team. Whereas if you look at, you know, that, you know, the SoCon, it's got a bunch of variants of style. They've got guys. There's a school, Samford, who beat Oregon State and I think beat Ole Miss this year. The head coach is like he has a system called Buddy Ball, and it's basically a quick, you know, quick fast point guard, get it up, you know, move, you know, motions, shoot shot, take threes. Citadel, you know, had a guy who, you know, their previous head coach who just got fired a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week. You know, at one point a few years ago, they had the number one offense in the country. Then you have others, you know, a school like Furman that shoots a lot of threes and doesn't really have a formidable post presence. And so you've got a lot of different variants of styles. And I think at one point, I don't know if it finished up that way, but UTC did have the number one defense in the league. I think earlier in the season, I think Silvio changes a lot of what they're trying to do, and he missed some time, you know, with an ab injury. And I think he missed the game. He may have missed a game or maybe a week due to COVID, because he's not always – he's not the best defender, but he's so athletic that he can make up – you know, he can make a mistake and make up for it because that's his athleticism. So I don't know necessarily how to answer it, whereas you look at job defensively, but that they've been at least top half of the country. I mean, they're obviously really prolific offensively, but I think their defense kind of got better as the season went on. And, you know, the head coach is a Wisconsin guy, and so he's very big on offensive efficiency. He bragged about it on his opening press conference. But to him, defense is about effort. And if he has five guys giving effort, he'll take the results. And, you know, those have been pretty, you know, pretty much buried, as you mentioned, so far this year.
You know, that's a great point that he, somebody who knows the Big Ten and so probably familiar with what Brad Underwood, the Illinois coach, is trying to accomplish on his end. How deep does Chattanooga go? Can we expect a 7-8-man rotation?
Yeah, you know, they start, I want to say, 3 or 4 seniors and a junior in Casey Hankton, the St. Louis transfer. They've got a kid, A.J. Caldwell, coming off the bench, a pretty good shooter. They've got another kid, Grant Ledford, who had 25, and they played against ETSU, and they won and clinched the regular season title. He had 7 threes, 25. And they've got the 2 bigs that come off the bench, Diggs and Ianni. So they'll go about 8 or 9, you know, depending on what – I don't know the makeup. I know a little bit about Illinois' guard. I don't necessarily know the makeup of them, but they've got a kid that sometimes will come off the bench. Not much of a scoring threat, but will guard you for 94 feet, a kid named Tata Strickland. So they typically go about 8 to 9. I think, you know, Caldwell will certainly get time off the bench, and so will, you know, the 2 bigs. Ledford, I mean, depending on the game, the way the game's going, and maybe Strickland, if there's like a guard who just like gets off to a really quick start, because Strickland's short and quick. It can kind of bug you, and it's just kind of has a dog mentality defensively. He just doesn't give them much offensively, so you have to kind of pick your spots with him. So I'd say 7 to 8. Eight for sure, probably 9, and we'll see about Strickland.
Yeah. There's a player that you may or may not have heard of, but you'll get to know on Friday, and that's Trent Frazier. Is a fifth-year senior. He came back for his COVID year, and all Big Ten defensive player. On the all Big Ten defensive team and probably one of the better defenders in the country. They've probably been underrated. And that's part of that is that the Illinois program has been down so long that many of the national media just now becoming more familiar with the personnel of this team in the past couple of years. But Frazier is somebody that he's in the top 10 in scoring all time, but also defensively, Brad Underwood once quoted earlier this season, he said, Trent just steals your soul on defense.
Right.
He's a pest. And so whoever your top, maybe the kid out of Belleville, Illinois, who's a teammate of EJ Liddell, is he the 6'4 kid that you're talking about?
Yeah. That's Smith, Malachi Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. That's him. And Underwood's familiar with him. So I'm curious to see if he will, if he'll get draw that assignment. And then Demonte Williams is the other 6'3 senior who sometimes, you know, guards 6'9 guys, but they're just two lockdown pesky guys that on the, you know, perimeter that we'll certainly look at. Well, what are your keys to the game here? What are the keys, the 2 or 3 things that Chattanooga has to do to pull off this upset and make some noise this weekend?
Right. Well, I think number one is they're going to have to figure out a way to neutralize Kofi. I think that's, you know, just looking a little bit at what they do. That's a big part of, you know, of their offense. Paris, how does he utilize those 3 bigs to kind of, you know, go up against Cockburn? And then, you know, like they do a good job of preventing opposing teams from, they'll let you shoot your percentage in terms of 3-pointers, but they won't let you shoot. They try to keep you from shooting your number. So say like you shoot 35%, but you make 10 threes a game. I guess that would probably average out to about 28, 29 attempts. If you make 10 of 29 on average in a game on the season, they're going to try and make you go 6 of 17 or something like that. Mm. Because those 12, can you make up those 12 points somewhere else? So can they do that? Can they, you know, you talk about one of the guys maybe getting hot. I mean, can they prevent one of those guys from getting hot on that stage? And I think lastly, it's just, can they make it a game? Can it be a game with 4 minutes to go? Like, can they enter that last media timeout? Maybe they're up 3, maybe they're down 4, but because at some point, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, like so many people are picking UTC that can kind of get in both teams' heads a little bit, I think, because I think it's almost uncomfortable how many people are picking UTC. I mean, except Davis put them in the Sweet 16 already.
Right.
So I think how does that play into it? Like, can UTC play with a level of freedom? And can they have it a game with 4 minutes to go? Because you are talking about an Illinois team that didn't quite reach its expectation last season. You know, and obviously they had a couple of players. As a Chicago Bulls fan, I'm thankful for the University of Illinois and all they did to groom my future point guard for the Bulls. But yeah, I mean, like, can they have it, make it, you know, keep it tight with 4 minutes to go? Because after a while, like, the team who has the higher seed, the team who is the bigger level school, they may start feeling that. And like, if you make it tight with 4 minutes to play, how does that last 4 minutes play out? Like, can you play with the level of freedom that can get you a win, as opposed to, will they start to get a little tight because they're like, man, we can't lose this. We can't lose this. So I just think that, you know, kind of holding, you know, keeping them off the 3-point line as best they can. Illinois doesn't chase threes, you know, like a team like Furman does. Like, Furman's going to get a ton of attempts. I think they led the nation in threes made and attempted this year. So they're going to chase threes, whereas Illinois is not going to chase them. But can you prevent them from shooting their number? And obviously, you know, if they shoot their percentage, if they don't hit the number they're accustomed to making, can that be a difference? And then obviously, can you slow down Kofi? Because that's a low. And like, there's no, I mean, we can be as, you know, coy about it. We can be as sweet about it. We can joke about it all you want to, but like, stopping that guy would be that's a monumental task. That would be no small feat. And so I think if they can at least neutralize him and at least two of those three things, if they do at least two of those three things, maybe Kofi gets off, but nobody else does anything. Maybe they, you know, maybe the shooters make shots, but you can't get Kofi going, and now you got to figure out a different way to win. Like, they've got to take away something. I guess the answer is going to be, what are they going to take away?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. There's no player in the country like Kofi Coburn. I mean, when you're, you know, 7'2", 290 and a, you know, like 9% body fat or something. I mean, he's, you know, I mean, the guy is just he's a specimen, and we've watched him get better. I mean, his footwork now is, you know, light years ahead of where it was even a year ago. And there's some talk that he may come back for a senior year, as he's not on any draft boards right now. So he's around to terrorize the college landscape for another year.
Right. National Player of the Year next year.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I love Oscar Tshiebwe and what he's done at Kentucky, but he doesn't face the double and triple teams every time he touches the ball the way Kofi does. I will tell you that I think another thing is how the referees call the game is very different. If it gets in a thing where Kofi's getting calls where he gets grabbed, it's a different game than when he doesn't. Purdue, if you watch those games, Purdue routinely goes into the final minute with only 4 fouls in the entire half. They just don't get called for fouls. And that certainly helps. That negates what Kofi can do because there's more clutching and grabbing in those games. I think the game, probably the most recent game where Illinois was really on offensively, would have been the Michigan game, where Plummer went off for the 6 threes in the first half, ended up tying, or it was like maybe had 7 in the game, or he tied it against Ohio State, but he had 6 threes and like 21 points in the first half. And then the second they shut him down, but that opened up things for Kofi, and ended up scoring like 21 of his 26 in the second half. I mean, it's, you know, it's almost a pick your poison if you've got outside shooting for Illinois, but again, that's the if. Well, before I let you go, let's get a prediction from you. Are you driving back Saturday or driving back on Monday?
Oh man. Well, my son has AAU tryouts in Nashville this weekend. So I'll probably look for, I prefer to be driving back Saturday. Is that going to happen? I'm going to say I'm driving back Monday with a second round loss.
Okay.
I don't know how it happens. Again, I think you're talking about teams that are, again, like I do think there's something to be said for, you know, having guys, you know, who are hungry. I mean, this UTC team will look nothing like this next year.
Uh-huh.
Nothing like this. Like, they lose 5 seniors, I believe. There's, you know, the Smith kid, I think, will be a G League person next year, or maybe, you know, maybe he ends up going wherever Lamont Paris goes, you know, should he leave and take another job, which seems very likely, especially with some of the smoke around certain, you know, job openings and things that are still yet to open. I think there's a hunger there that they know that they're not going to get this opportunity again. I think that gets them one win, and we'll see what happens on Sunday. And Illinois fans can tweet at me at Gene Henley 3 whenever I'm spectacularly wrong in the LI, and I win by 26 points on Friday night.
There you go. And if you follow anybody Illini fans, they will.
So real quick, like 5 years ago, I went on that blogging was still a big thing back then, and I, you know, because I'm just going to have fun with this, I don't really care. But, you know, like, you would have thought the way I picked him on one Indiana blog, I picked UTC to win, and they got beat by 27 points, and I didn't take in consideration, you know, just how hungry that Indiana team was about how they got shafted in that first round game.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I'm a little more skeptical, because it's the way that Indiana fans came after me. I've said some stuff on social media. I've picked coaches to leave for other jobs. I picked a coach to leave for a job once based off of the information I've had. And so Louisville women's basketball fans don't necessarily love me right now. There's certain days. So I don't mind it. It's social media, it's sports, it's fun. And so I'm prepared for it. Like, if it's a 4-point game, you could probably just, you can leave my mentions alone. But if it's like 10, if it's like 20, 25, okay, I deserve it. But hey, you know, shooter shoot. And I was, you know, I was a shooter at my old age. So shooter shoot. And if we're wrong, if we miss, we'll just shoot again next time.
I love it. We will leave it there. And if it gets too bad, I'll try to jump in and try to help. Hey, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He just said,
deserve it, man. I would deserve everything that came my way. I understand and I respect it, man. Just leave my son alone, man. Leave my family alone. But everybody else, I'm fair game.
There you go.
Pull up anything. I'm fair game. But yeah. It's all fun.
Yep, I'm with you. And being in the media forever, I'm the same way. Say what you want about me, just leave my family out of it. Absolutely. Hey, Gene, enjoy the weekend, and best of luck to you. And hopefully we get a chance to talk soon.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. I had a great time.
Okay, Gene Henley joining us here on Eye on the Illini, the beat writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, as he is getting ready to cover this game for the Chattanooga Mocs, the 13th seed against the 4th seed Illinois Fighting Illini, 5:50 p.m. tip time, Central Time on TNT. Don't forget complete pregame and postgame coverage on IlliniGuys.com, and be sure to subscribe as well. 7-day free trial at any time. Come in, kick the tires, and try it out. But we have got the two best insiders when it comes to basketball, on Brad Sturdy and Kedrick Prince. Find out first before your friends do. Become a member of IlliniGuys.com. And be sure to also check out our other series as well, Sturdy for 30, the other podcast series done by our insider and analyst, Brad Sturdy, as well. For everyone here from IlliniGuys.com, I'm Larry Smith. We'll see you next time.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Ever dream of a 3-row SUV where everything for every passenger feels just right? Introducing the all-new Infiniti QX80. With available features like biometric cooling, electronic air suspension, and segment-first individual audio that isolates sound. Right to the driver's seat. Discover every just right feature in the all-new QX80 at InfinityUSA.com. 2025 QX80 is not yet available for purchase. Expected availability summer 2024. Individual audio cannot buffer all interior sounds. See owner's manual for details.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available. Tremfya.